better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Before we go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline, because I know we have a few people calling in, Matt Zimmerman and his post-game videos that he does are always cool because he kind of just breaks down the game and his thoughts on it. But last night was especially great because he's sitting there. If you haven't seen it, go to his Twitter account. But he's sitting there, and he just takes a huge swig from a Mountain Dew can before it even starts. Just a huge swig, and then he's like, boom, there he goes. He's off to the races. I'm like, I want Matt Zimmerman to give me life advice. Yeah. When he takes just a huge swig of Mountain Dew and then goes to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was awesome.
He does a pregame video too, that kind of a scouting report. He just kind of started this. It's good work for him. So mm-hmm. It's a good job audition, I guess I should say.
Well, you got him drinking Mountain Dew. You got Eric Musselman wearing the Pepsi shirt.
I don't get that. That's the one thing I don't like about it.
He's a company, he's a company man, Tommy. Well. I mean, because let's be honest, Tommy. If the Pepsi Corporation came to you and said, Tommy, I want to spend $100,000 in advertising on your stations, you would be wearing Pepsi and drinking Pepsi every day.
Folks, let me tell you about Diet Pepsi. It's my favorite drink and from childhood.
And people would be knowing you're lying through your teeth, but it wouldn't matter.
I get it, and I appreciate his loyalty to the brand, but at his core. You'll never get this out of him, but at his core, he cannot prefer that stuff over a Coke Zero.
He will never say otherwise.
I know it.
I know. You can only hope that there's something different inside of that bottle and besides what it's actually labeled. That's the only thing you can hope for, which it may be, but we'll never know. But it's just an exciting time right now if you're a Razorback basketball fan, for sure. And we're going to talk about that, of course, a lot in the college football playoffs as we do have the national championship game set. So let's go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline. Billy Joe, the LSU fan's calling in. What's going on, Billy Joe?
Congratulations.
Oh, what's going on, man? How y'all doing?
We're doing good. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing great. Congratulations on y'all going 11-1 in basketball. About time y'all do good. Oh, with that being noted, I guess they're going to put us.
Hang on. Now, wait a damn minute. We have welcomed your calls, and you've been a very good, respectable caller, and then you come in here, you want to talk down to us like that?
No, I said congratulations on y'all.
No, you was backhanded.
Good.
Come on. That was about time y'all did something. Now don't start that now. Don't start that.
Well, let me just
LSU's got no room to say anything in basketball. You got all the room in the world in football.
No.
You ain't got no room in basketball. So just don't even go.
I know, but listen, I mean, it's y'all doing good. That's why I gave y'all props.
Yeah, well.
But now, let me see. I guess they're going to put us on trial for us catching a murder charge when we gave Oklahoma a good beating.
Well.
Beating 63-28.
And then in the second half.
And I wish nothing but the best going forward in basketball.
Yeah.
But on that note, I'm going to leave it on this. Y'all have a good day. God bless. And we're going to win the championship.
I hope you do.
Appreciate it, Billy Joe.
Did I hear that wrong? Am I overreacting on money? Because that sounded like a backhanded... Hey, a pat on the head. Hey, I hope y'all do well in basketball.
You know, I'm gonna play Switzerland here and say that, it was backhanded, but it wasn't his intention to be.
Well, it hit me wrong.
Because he's been pretty complimentary of Arkansas.
That's what I'm saying. Billy Joe has been a good LSU caller.
I just think
But I'm not about to sit here, particularly the last 2 days of the year, and take crap from an LSU fan over our basketball team. Ain't gonna do it.
Yeah. No. I think that he meant well. It just came out wrong. That's what we'll go with. But hey, if you're an LSU fan though, you have plenty to be excited about too. Like, it was 63-28. It wasn't even that close. Like, LSU could have chosen their score.
They could have scored 100 if they wanted to.
Joe Burrow's stats. And this is this is what's crazy. Joe Burrow's stats. 29 of 39 for 493 yards. You know how many touchdowns he had in the first half? 7.
You know, I think they had 8 possessions. He scored on 7 of the first 8 possessions.
When Brandon Allen threw 7 touchdown passes against Mississippi State in 2015, I thought that was one of the most impressive performances of a quarterback I've ever seen. Joe Burrow did it in one half in the college football playoff semis. That was just incredible. I mean, he put on a clinic. He still got one more game, but man, oh man. And here's the question I'm going to have, and I will get to back to the Cherokee Casino Hotline real quick. But if LSU and Joe Burrow go out and dominate Clemson, I don't think that they're going to do that, what they did against Oklahoma, but just say they go out and win convincingly, win big, not even a contest. Where is LSU of 2019 going to rank among the all-time college football teams you've seen? Because it's one thing to win it all and go undefeated, but the way they've been so dominant across the board, where they have been tested this year, they've had a difficult schedule this year. They've played some of the best college football teams this year. And the only time, I mean, they got tested against Auburn where they only won by 3. They got tested against Bama where they only won by 5. But the rest of the way, it's just been onslaughts. And Texas, I know early in the season was close too, but Joe Burrow and this LSU team, they'll have to rank one of the top performances, top seasons I've seen from a college football team.
Particularly because you go through the competition, they've played good teams. They were battle-tested throughout the season against ranked teams during the year. And that was the knock on Alabama, who ultimately proved that they weren't good enough against LSU and against Auburn, is they weren't tested. That's the one thing you cannot say about this LSU team. They were tested more weeks than they were not. I mean, they didn't have a lot of weeks off, and that's the nature of the SEC. But sometimes the schedule will, based on who your cross-divisional opponent is and based on who is rolling on your rotation that year from the opposite division, you can have a little bit lighter schedule. You know, Arkansas had Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and Missouri, who's their constant opponent, permanent opponent. Well, does it get any better than that generally?
No. That's as good as it can get.
You know. You know.
Which really makes the past two seasons.
And LSU's permanent opponent is what, Florida?
Florida.
So, I mean, you know, that's no slouch. So, yeah, they were well-tested this year.
Yeah, because if LSU beats Clemson, these are the teams that they would have beaten this year. They would have beaten Texas, Florida, Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Clemson.
Well, can we close the books on this idea that the Big 12 is on the same level as the other Power 5 leagues, particularly the Big 10, the ACC, and the SEC? Can we close the books on that? Or this conversation that Big 12 people want to bring up, well, we got the best offenses. Well, you got no defense to go with it. And then when you play the best defenses, which are in the SEC, you look silly.
Yeah.
I mean, this was embarrassing for that entire league, what happened to Oklahoma. A complete embarrassment.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I know that Oklahoma was completely and totally outmanned, outgunned, outcoached, out everything. But I think it's more of a credit to LSU, because LSU spanked Georgia in the SEC championship game, you know? I mean, it wasn't like LSU was just having some tough competition, barely winning games, and then just blew out Oklahoma. I just think LSU's on a mission. And it just seemed like all the stars are aligning for them. And, of course, they had plenty of time to prepare for this game. I agree that Oklahoma and the Big 12, the conference is not up to snuff or even close to what the SEC is or even the Big 10 at this point. But there were some people I saw that were saying that this should be the end of the Big 12 having teams in the championship, because I guess at this point they're 0-4 now in the college football playoff semis. Yeah. And it's just I don't want to go that far. But here's the thing. Who else were you going to put in?
Right.
You know, like, who's the other team? Going to put in Alabama with 2 losses, Georgia with 2 losses. They probably would have been better games, but you're not going to put them in over a one-loss Oklahoma. It's just not going to happen.
Well, here's one thing I think we can say for sure. And I've not been a big advocate for we've got to expand to 8 teams. But anyone that's been on board with expanding to 8 teams, that's another nail in that conversation's coffin, right? This showed that there aren't 8 teams, there's not even really 4 teams worthy of winning the national championship. There's no way you can counter that, John. I mean, there's not even 4 teams that belong in the conversation this year.
You don't think Georgia or Alabama could have done better?
Well, perhaps, but they didn't get that shot.
Well, I know, and that's what I'm saying. In an expanded playoff, one of them would have.
Well, it depends on, but if you go with the conference champions,
yeah.
You know, do you want to go that route? The problem is the committee doesn't have the guts. College football's stakeholders, the people that make these decisions, don't have the guts to truly put the best teams in the playoff. because we got to be politically correct. We got to get a team from over here and a team from over here and a team from over here. We got to be regionally unbiased, and we got to please everybody. Well, if you pointed to just put the best teams in the playoff, yeah, clearly Oklahoma didn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that when you're going to just put, because what they're afraid of is they're going to end up with four SEC teams in there some year. And this would have been a year you could have had
at least two.
Because I'm telling you now, Alabama, Georgia, and I would say even Auburn could have beat Oklahoma.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's
for sure.
Three SEC teams that sat at home watching the playoffs or, you know, playing in some other bowl game. They could have beaten Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Florida would have even
Florida, beaten them. Yeah, and then, you know, maybe, perhaps. But I think Georgia, Bama, and I'd say Auburn, because their defensive line is, whoo.
Yeah. And that's where I guess I come into play with
If you could go with eight teams, if you would truly put the best eight teams in college football in there, but they're not going to do that.
Well, see, that was going to be my point, is that, I've said this from the very get-go, and I didn't mean to get to a playoff expansion talk, but I think it is interesting because of what we saw over the weekend. But I just believe that I just want the human element taken out as much as possible.
That's why I like conference champions.
And exactly right. And that's where I want the playoff to expand, just solely on that reason, to where you have an automatic qualifier if you win your conference. Because if you do that, there's no ifs, ands, buts about it. There's no conferences getting left out, at least from the Power Five. It's just, you know what you have to do to get in.
Who was the Pac-12 champion this year?
Is it Oregon?
Exactly.
Think?
How Maybe. Bad would they have been beaten by LSU?
Oh, it would have been a bloodbath.
Because they'd have been the 8th seed. Playing the one. Ooh.
Would have been a bloodbath. But you know what? I would have liked to see what Alabama could have done. Maybe they could have gotten redemption.
You know.
I could love to see what Georgia could have done. Would like to see it.
Oh, I think it'd create more excitement. I just don't know that in the end, you probably end up not identifying the best football team of the year that way. I think LSU's clearly, maybe it's our SEC bias, LSU's clearly the best football team this year. And maybe they slip on the banana peel. I just don't think Clemson's been tested the way LSU's been tested.
No.
We're talking about their schedule. The ACC did not test Clemson the way LSU's been tested. That's why they're the one seed at this point. Now, can Clemson beat LSU? Absolutely. They're good enough. You know, LSU's not invincible. But anyone that's paid attention this year would tell you LSU's the best football team to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Their resume speaks for itself. And what the more you expand this, I mean, and obviously you're giving teams that aren't as worthy the opportunity, but you're also giving the opportunity for teams that have proven themselves, like LSU, for what now, 13 games, to slip up. And because eventually you roll a 7 in this deal.
Yeah. And let's be honest. To me, 4 is too less, but 8 might be too many. But you can't have.
I don't want buys.
No. And you don't need it. And that's why I'm saying, like, it's not that I feel like there's 8 teams that are good enough to win a national championship. I just think that there could be more than 4. But so it's like you're just stuck in between a rock and a hard place.
Any talk of 6 and giving buys, I'm out on that deal.
I don't want that, because it's that's just not a good formula. And I know that it works in the NFL, but, you know, it just doesn't need to be in college football. If you're going to do it to 8.
The NFL will be expanding soon, I think.
Yeah, and which
adding
they don't
another wild card spot.
They don't need to. I don't think they need to, but it's neither here nor there. I just think 8 teams is a fair enough shot to where nobody will ever have any complaints.
But you don't need 8 teams. I mean, that's fine if you want to take the human element out of
that's,
it.
That's your argument.
If that, and I agree with that. Now, it's not up to a committee. It's up to what you do on the field, and you qualify by winning games on the field. And I think it could do some things for regular season schedules that we'd all benefit from. But there's no need for 8 teams to identify the best one.
No. There's not. And I don't think anybody should ever say that there is. But it to me,
you could go back to 2.
Yeah. It's just selfishly for me, I want to see more football. Well, I want to see football between the top 8 teams in the country. I want to see them all facing off against each other, because it's more football we get to watch.
But under the BCS model, the argument is if you were the 3rd team, you got screwed. Now, if you're the 5th team, you got screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to 8, the 9th team's going to feel they were left out. We could have won the national title. We just got screwed because we were the 9th team.
Yeah. But I just
how far there's some team out there that's the 70th team in college basketball that doesn't get into the big dance in March. to March Madness that feels like they got the shaft.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, you're always going to have that no matter what. No matter what setup you have. Again, it just goes back to I hate the human element being in these things because in every other league, in every other sport, in every other level, they don't have a committee that comes together and says, these are the best teams in the country.
College basketball.
Well, no, I know. But what I'm saying is that you have automatic qualifiers in that.
Yeah, now. But half the field isn't.
Right. And you got, and I understand you got to have that. But I'm saying that I want to have it to where you know what you have to do to get into the playoff.
Because you ought, and what you're saying is there should be an entrance into the playoff without that you just you earn.
Yeah. Where it's like, I know if I do this, I'm in. Mm-hmm. That's all
I'm okay
I want.
With that.
That's all I want.
But to do that, you probably got to go to 8.
Yeah. And I feel like it's going to happen sooner rather than later because it didn't happen this year, but there's going to be 1 year where you're going to have an undefeated team from all 5 power conferences and somebody's going to get left out. I think it'll happen 1 year. And then where are you at? Or there's going to be like a Notre Dame that's also undefeated. You know, and what are their situations?
Is you make the Pac-12 and the Big 12 play each other as like a play-in game to the playoff. Because both those conferences don't deserve a team in the playoff.
Not right now.
That's what you maybe should do. All right, Pac-12, Big 12, your champions got to play each other on like December 20th. If you win that game, we might let you in. Maybe.
How did the Pac-12 get so bad? Like, I'm serious. How did they get so bad? Because I'm not saying they were ever really great, but you know, I mean,
well,
USC was rolling, Oregon was rolling too for the time they had under Chip Kelly.
Historically, the Pac-12 is good when USC is good.
Yeah, no, I agree. But it's just by and large, even there was years where Stanford with Andrew Luck was there. I mean, they had a really good run there. I mean, it just
when USC is good, it's a rising tide that lifts all boats in that conference.
Mm-hmm.
I know Oregon had their moment with Chip Kelly. That league has always been better when USC is better.
Yeah. Well, they decided to...
Because here's the deal.
Go out with Clay Helton.
Where are the best high school football players in America? They're in Texas.
Florida.
They're in Georgia. They're in Florida. They're in the South. I mean, it's not a secret why the Southeastern Conference is the best league.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talent's here.
Yeah. It's a hard ask to get a kid to move 2 time zones away to go play college football. Not that California doesn't have kids. They just don't have the abundance of linemen and elite, you know, defensive and offensive linemen like you do in the South. You just don't.
Yeah.
Louisiana. I mean, these are the places where NFL players are birthed.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's like, remember when Ricky Town was a 4-star quarterback out of California?
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't even make the practice squad in Arkansas. I mean, I'm not saying that that's the greatest indication of all players. It's one example. But I'm just saying that it's different. It's a different league in the SEC for sure. Let's go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline. Danny's in Russellville. What's going on, Danny?
Good morning, guys. Who knew that Matt Jones was hopped up on Mountain Dew?
Who?
Matt Zimmerman.
Matt Zimmerman. I'm sorry. Guys, what a gritty performance last night by the Hogs. You know, they clearly in the first half just couldn't hit anything, and the big man was killing us. But look what happened, second half. They shut him down. I think he scored 4 points in the second half. It's wonderful to have a coaching staff that can make adjustments, and they definitely made adjustments on him. And then we just started hitting some shots. We still yet this year have not shot the ball as good as we're capable, but we're gritty. And you get down 9 points under 10 minutes, you don't feel like we're out of the game because it's several times this year we've been in that situation and we've came back. So I thought that was a great win at Indiana against a quality team on the road in a hostile environment. That's a good win right there.
You know, Arkansas was 38% for the game from 3-point range, but 47% in the second half.
To your point. First half.
Yeah, first half, 28%, 4 of 14.
Yeah, they weren't hitting their shots. But you got to love this team. I mean, like the coach said on the post game last night, said, well, they tried to expose us with their height. But he said, but listen to this. It's a mismatch for our 6'5 guards because these big guys trying to cover these quick guards is a mismatch too. So he looks at it from both ways. You got to love where we're headed in basketball. Tommy, I'd never tried Coke Zero mm-hmm. until you started talking about it.
Uh-oh.
And? I always thought it tasted like, well, zero. I never had tried it. And I heard you guys talking about it. I thought, well, I'm going to try that, you know. And that's really good. I actually look for it now.
But exactly.
There's a, like McDonald's and Burger King don't have it here.
And they got to get up there. They got to get with the program.
I mean, Hardee's has it, you know, Zaxby's, quite a few places. But anyway, it's really good, you know. I look for it now because it's got a good taste to it. Thanks for letting me know about that.
One more converted.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
Hey, I will choose where we are eating or where we're going to stop at a convenience store based on knowing who has Coke Zero and who doesn't. Have an extensive list I keep in my car, you know.
Anyway, so you're guys, losing. Over the holidays, I watched a little bit of basketball and football, and just a couple observations. Patrick Beverly, he's still a pest. You know, when he was at Arkansas, he was really getting under people's skin, and he's still doing it. I watched the Lakers and the Clipper game, and he's still the same pest he ever was. And the one game that stands out to me is the Air Force and Washington State. I watched that game. Air Force had a 20-play, almost 13-minute drive. I don't believe I've ever seen a drive to take almost half of the first half in one drive. And that was just the contrasting styles. Washington State going fast and Air Force going slow. Anyway, guys, thanks for taking my call and have a good day.
Appreciate it, Danny. I was about to say the time I remember is Arkansas and Brett Bielema against Texas A&M. Was it a 19-play, 8.5-minute drive that resulted in no points?
No, a 13-minute drive there.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a quarter.
Yeah, that's impressive. But you know what? I bet you they got points on it. I know Arkansas did not. By the way, the Eric Musselman clip that you were referring to, Danny, this is what he was talking about after.
You know, every game we hear the same thing, like, how is Arkansas going to match up with people? Well, they also have to match up with us because we play four guards and we space the floor and we're hard to match up with when we're knocking down threes. And at one of the timeouts with about 11 and a half minutes to go, you know, when we were down, we were down 10 at the one point, we had to make threes in order to survive, just like they're so good inside the lane. But I thought the other thing is we did a good job of defending without fouling. That was a huge key coming into the game.
I mean, to me, when he says that, you can tell he's got the confidence in him. It's like, hey, you talk about us matching up against the bigs, but just know that you have to match up against us.
That's a great point. I mean, no one really turns that around, but how do you take your four or your five and match up with another one or two? Maybe a three, because that's what you're out of your element now.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, when you hear those things, you can see something a brewing with this Razorback basketball team. And when they keep getting wins like that against Indiana on the road in Bloomington, it doesn't get any bigger than that. So, I mean, I enjoy this team. I know a lot of Razorback fans enjoy this team. Seeing all those fans that they're there at the airport to welcome them home last night was incredible. That Texas A&M game is going to be fun on Saturday.
Tells you right now, the right coach can turn anything around.
And just in 1 year, it can make all the difference in the world.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Want to get on the conversation, call or text the Cherokee Casino hotline at 877-377-6963. Been talking a lot of basketball this morning, but I want to shift gears a little bit and talk football because since we were on the air, at least doing a live show last, Arkansas did finally get their offensive coordinator, and his name is Kendall Briles. It was a name that was getting thrown around that we discussed. He was coming from Florida State, and he had some different stops before that, obviously at Baylor. He was at Houston. He had success pretty much everywhere he went as far as offense goes and made tremendous strides even in year one of the programs that he was at. And I know that a lot of Razorback fans are excited about him and the type of offense or the prospective offense, potential offense that he could possibly bring. And Clay, I know that people were curious to see what type of direction Sam Pittman would go when it comes to his offense coordinator and the style and philosophy. Do you feel like this was the best move Arkansas could have made or City Sam Pittman could have made when hiring an offensive coordinator?
Yeah, it certainly fits. And it seems to be exactly what he was talking about in his introductory press conference that he was going to run this offense, and he's got a guy that's really good at it and also has ties to Texas, so that it was a good fit for a lot of reasons. I mean, when you talk about the Browls' name in Texas, you know, I know we spent a lot of time the last 2 years talking about, you know, that the people in Texas, the high school coaches, think of Chad Morris as, you know, one of their state treasures. But if there's a name that trumps that, it's the Browls' name. And, you know, that's, you know, he followed Art Browls at Stephenville, and it really wasn't until he got to Lake Travis that he did the kind of things that, you know, that Art Browls had done. And so it's interesting to me how it's all kind of come full circle in that way. You know, his task now is to straighten out the quarterback situation. That, you know, what we have 9 in the last 2 years, and you got to get down to one, one quarterback, please. Yeah. But yeah, it looks like a good fit. You know, the only issue that you have is that he's been highly mobile. He's been, you know, the last, you know, few years it's been one and done. So hopefully things will stabilize at Arkansas. I mean, it wasn't that he was looking every year. It was just the way things fell at those different jobs. And, you know, just about the time he get there, something bad happened, and he, you know, it wasn't his doing. You know, certainly at Florida State, he helped their offense, and maybe it wasn't great yet, but he had turned the corner, and they were going to be better this year, I think, if he had they'd given that staff another year.
Yeah. You know, wasn't that long ago that the most you'd ever paid an assistant coach was what you paid John Chavis, and now with Barry Odom and with Kendall Briles, I believe I'm right on this, Clay, you've never had two assistant coaches making 7 figures, and now Arkansas is really kind of getting to where college football's evolved to. Coordinators making $1 million or more on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, and so you kept you know Pittman's contract, you kept his number down just a little bit, and you go back to the Bielema days, the head coach made all the money and the assistants did not. Changed a little bit, you know, with John Chavis, but they've flattened that out with the two coordinators and the head coach. Those three salaries are, you know, two came up, went one went down from, you know, from what 3 years ago you were paying on your staff. And I think the coordinators are so important. And, you know, now they'll be able to recruit with knowing, you know, where you can show, you know, this last period, you can show these players, this is what we've got on offense, this is what we're going to do, and it'll be important. And I suspect you'll see a few more offensive guys, you know, jump in with the arrival of the offensive coordinator. Now, I guess we got a couple other coaches to wait on till after Wednesday. You know, there's some teams still playing games. I think that's where the last two coaches will come, and you would expect by the end of the week you'll have your staff.
Yeah, and going back to the Kendall Briles angle, if you just look at the stops that he's been at, and he hasn't been at any particular spot for very long, but everywhere he went to, the offense, at least in the most important stats, which of course is total yardage and scoring, have jumped dramatically in his first year. If you just look at Florida State, which is, I'm not saying they're exact same situation, but Florida State and the offense that Kendall Briles had to take over was a team that had a terrible offensive line, one that had really struggled. And so they had a lot of to do in front of them because before he took over, Florida State's offense was ranked 103rd in total offense in the country and 113th in scoring, only averaging 22 points a game. And that was back then. But in his 1 year, he had him jump. Now, it wasn't just light years, but had him jump up 40 extra yards each game and also averaged 29.1 points per game instead of 22. So, and that's just at Florida State. Everywhere else, whether it was at Florida Atlantic, whether it was at Houston, at Baylor, wherever, the offense has always made dramatic improvements in his first year. Now, to say that if Arkansas can make those dramatic deals, you know, maybe. We don't know exactly what all this team's going to look like. The quarterback situation is obviously going to be the most important. But another angle that's interesting is because we know that Arkansas's got to find another quarterback. They need somebody to add some depth to this roster. Not to say that KJ Jefferson isn't capable, but they got to add some depth there. They got to get some bodies. The whole De'Eric King, the kid from Houston, that have redshirted this year. There's some speculation that he's probably going to transfer out, who threw for almost 3,000 yards in 2018, 36 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, as a relationship, or at least was very close with Kendall Briles in his time as Houston. So that's an option too. So they got to work on a quarterback situation. But my whole point all saying this, though, is that it seems like the staff, at least with the two coordinators, and we'll see what the rest of the things fall into place, that's about as good as you could ask for Sam Pittman in his year one, going out and getting some big time hires. And people were not very sold on it. I'm talking about national media when they saw that Lane Kiffin was the Ole Miss. You know, that was the real sexy hire for everybody, and it made sense. But to me, as far as what the staff has been assembled so far, Sam Pittman has won that round when it comes to the guys that he's putting around him. And I think that that's where the excitement can come into play with Razorback fans. If they can close out this recruiting class strong, they can put some things together, add another quarterback, another few pieces. That's really where the Razorback fans are excitement is going to be about, Clay.
Yeah, I think we're still waiting to see defensive line coach, which I think is an important hire, and then strength and conditioning coach. And that, those are the two critical pieces to the puzzle that you're still asking questions about, and hopefully that's going to happen sooner rather than later. You know, I think this week, but I think that if you polled Arkansas coaches 3 weeks ago, they were kind of had an empty feeling in their stomach. It didn't look like they were getting the guys that they wanted, and you know, how is this going to play out? And then, you know, you hired Pittman. Okay, can he hire a staff? Well, all the questions have been answered, and even a few hits in recruiting have come, you know, have happened where you think, well, they can close, they can flip guys, you know, they have some ability on the recruiting trail, and you thought that would be the case with Sam Pittman, and I think it will be. You know, it's the offensive line is the next thing that has to be fixed. And this offense isn't going to go until these guys, you know, till they get a little more size, a little more strength, a little more bulk. And I'll be interested to see what the offensive line looks like when we roll into spring practice in really 3 months. You know, have all these guys, bulked up a little bit over the winter. I started to say fatten up, but nobody wants fat, right?
No, you want the good weight, not the bad weight.
Yeah.
You bring that up because you talk about strength and conditioning coach and filling out the staff. When is prime time for the strength and conditioning coach? It's January, February, heading into spring practice, right? That's when you're trying to make the biggest gains in the off season, but really in the calendar year, you know, because of the limited contact that the coaches can have with the coaching staff, they only get a limited, 2 hours a week or whatever it is, with the players. That's prime time for the strength and conditioning coach and their staff. So getting that person in place sooner rather than later is going to be critical as you hit the spring semester starting very soon.
Yeah, you basically get 10 days in January. I mean, January is a misnomer anymore because school starts so late. You know, that I'll be interested to see when Sam Pittman sets spring practice, if that gives his staff a little later. I mean, Chad Morris, he started it 2 weeks before spring break, which that's the earliest they've ever done it at Arkansas. I just wonder if he pushes it back just a little bit more to give that strength staff 2 more weeks that they're going to need to get these guys, you know, bigger in the lower body, which is what I think needs to happen.
And they'd probably like to have that red-white game a little bit later than the last time they had it in War Memorial, because it will be down there this year for the red-white game when it was sleeting and snowing. And, you know, you never know in Arkansas, but you'd like to think the later you push that back, maybe the better weather you're going to get too.
Yeah, that was not a spring game. That was a winter game.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I forgot about all that. That was weird.
Yeah, and so you're back down there this year for the red-white game, and they had nobody there, which you could understand in that weather. Just the idea of
what do you mean? I was there, Tommy.
Okay, they had Clay, and then nobody else there.
That's right.
Game.
There wasn't anybody else there.
So
they'd just like to maybe have a little better attendance for that game, and I think you will with a new coach. But maybe perhaps
the
thought of a later date would bring better weather, would bring a bigger crowd.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you mentioned the strength and conditioning, because that's the thing I'm going to be looking at the most, and I think a lot of people will. is just, you know, you got Sam Pittman, an offensive line coach. He's now your head coach. He's a guy that is just a guru when it comes to forming, putting together offensive line units, getting guys in the right shape, making sure that they're ready to play, especially in the SEC, which we know how vital it is. But we also know that the struggles Arkansas has had the past few seasons as the offensive line. Now, you can go out and you can recruit and you can do all that, but you can't just plug in a true freshman and expect it to immediately get fixed. So I'm going to be interested to see the type of adjustments that can be made on this offensive line and maybe even have some guys that are currently on this roster that with the right coaching, the right strength and conditioning, can actually turn into a very serviceable SEC offensive lineman. Because I know that it's completely different examples, but we just talked about Eric Musselman and this basketball team and how just mere adjustments have been made, and you can see the results on some of these players and some of these guys. Like looking at Adrio Bailey, he's just a different, completely different player from just having the coaching and putting him in a position to be successful. I'll be curious to see how Sam Pittman, if he can, and which I think that if anybody can, he can, but how he can make some of these offensive linemen fit in the SEC, and maybe that's where your hope can lie. Maybe they'll go a JUCO route to try to get some added depth. I think that'll be smart of them too. But can they have an offensive line that can at least protect the quarterback, at least open up some lanes? That's what I'm going to think is going to be the key for me, Clay, is just seeing what he can do with the guys currently on the roster.
Yeah, I think you're going to see Myron Cunningham bulk up. He was a thin left tackle. You know, he played the last half of the season after Colton Jackson retired because of injuries. I think you're going to see Ricky Stromberg, you know, add some weight. He had the problems with the acid reflux and, you know, came in at 265, played at 280 last year. I think he'll play 295, 300 next year at guard. I think you'll see Luke Jones be a factor at center, you know, can compete with Ty Clary there. Bo Limmer, Brady Latham, those are guys that you didn't see a lot last year but really performed well on the practice field. Both of them have a nasty attitude. Remind you a little bit, I think Latham in particular remind you a little bit of Dan Skipper. I think Sam Pittman's really going to like Brady Latham. You know, I knew his dad when he was starting center at the University of Oklahoma. I think he's a really good prospect. And then, you know, they're probably going to add some guys to the mix in the offseason. And what we saw in Sam's first year at Arkansas under Bielema, he will play freshman. I think it was maybe the Texas A&M game that Skipper and Kirkland both started for the first time. So he'll get some of those young guys ready. I think we know that the offensive line is going to improve. I expected it to be a better year for the offensive line next year, even with the previous staff coming back. So I think that with this, giving them a fresh look, and, you know, I think before it's all over, you're going to look at the offensive line instead of it being a detriment, being, you know, one of the positive aspects of this football team. And boy, would that not change your expectations.
Hey, this is the Monday Morning Quarterback brought to you by Crabtree RV in Alma. The Christmas Cash Day sale is about to end through New Year's Eve tomorrow. Sales tax paid or $1,000 in Christmas cash on the purchase of any RV from Crabtree, and they will still give you the most for your trade. The best deals of the year are happening now at Crabtree RV in Alma. It's where your family's dreams come true.
And Clay, you know, speaking more about this football team and the guys that they had, you know, some of the names you mentioned, I think is going to be interesting too. But as far as JUCO routes, I know that Sam Pittman's open to doing so, or at least the grad transfer in the transfer portal. What are some of the positions you feel like they're going to have to dive in and get a guy that's not just an 18-year-old kid, but look the guy to have some experience? What are some of the key positions they're going to have to make sure they get?
Yeah, I think you might see them add one more interior guy in the offensive line. And I don't know. I'm not the recruiting guy, so I'm not the one that's out there. But just imagine what having a Sebastian Tortola, you know, mm-hmm. one of these big guys that you can insert. You know, there's just so many times where, you know, it's third down and people know you're going to pass. They're going to have the bull rush. That guy's, you know, he's shooting a gap. And, you know, 330 or 340-pound guy, you know, he just anchors the middle of that line, and it just changes, you know, your pocket. And, you know, we saw it in these games on Saturday, both of those games, you know, that the quarterbacks that had the middle of the pocket to kind of slide in, they did well. And you don't, and you're turning, and there's somebody on top of you. And how many times have we seen that the last 2 years? And, you know, we're critical of those quarterbacks, but, you know, when there's you came down to the Kentucky game where you had a chance to win, and it's third down, and guard gave up the A-gap. Mm-hmm. It's fourth down, the other guard gave up the A-gap, and that just can't happen. And so that's what, you know, that's where a big guy, you know, just a massive body is not going to give up the A-gap. And so that's where I think that they need some help. And there's not one of those guys, you know, that's on this roster that you can say, let's pick and stick right there. You know, they did it twice with Caps and Froholt. You know, they brought him from the defensive line, but I don't see a guy over there that I thought could do that.
Well, and it would be ideal. And I know that you know, you got to get in the recruiting class and try to make it work and try to get some quality guys. But, you know, you mentioned some of the names, and even when Brett Bielema's first year in 2013, you had to rely on two true freshmen to play offensive line in significant snaps in Denver Kirkland and Dan Skipper. And you had some guys that obviously they were pretty good, but you could tell that they were true freshmen, but at least made it a little easier. Now, obviously, what Bobby Petrino left behind on the offensive line was nowhere near what Chad Morris is leaving behind on the offensive line, so it's going to take some work. But if you can just go out and get just a couple guys like that too, even if they're true freshmen, guys that are at least capable of playing on the offensive line and being able to make it to where you're not having to worry about those issues that you were just mentioning, Clay, you know, that's what's going to at least make this Razorback football team in 2020 not to go 6-6, because that would be a tall task. Because that would probably mean they'd have to
win with Notre Dame on the
schedule. They'd have to probably win 3 SEC games. That's going to be tough. So, and maybe not go that, but at least get it to the point to where you're not getting worked by San Jose State on the defensive front.
Win the games you're supposed to.
Yes.
Be competitive in SEC games and maybe win one or two of those toss-up games.
Yeah.
An Ole Miss type game, a Missouri game. Yeah. You know, if you could win those games, plus just don't be losing to Western Kentucky, San Jose State, those caliber of teams. You know, win those three and, you know, win 4 or 5. So.
Yep. I want to see effort, toughness, and improvement. Those are the things. And if they do that, those three things on a consistent basis, you know, that will satisfy me. Progress is what I want. You want to see them getting better. And it's so frustrating. You get to game 8 and you say, we're not getting better, we're getting worse.
Yeah.
And that's what got the previous coaches fired. Right. You know, I don't think it was so much 2-10. It was the way they got to 2-10.
Yeah.
And I think that for Sam, they've just got to show progress in those three things. You know, effort, improvement, and just they're filling in the holes and they're getting better.
Yeah. Well, and the thing, Clay, like you mentioned, they play Nevada to start the season in 2020. I fully expect that game to be a tough one. Hopefully Arkansas can win, but it may be one of those games where it's like 28-20, something like that, close game, Arkansas wins. But I want to see it by the time they play Missouri at the end of the season in Arrowhead, a team that is completely different, night and day, where it's like you feel like going into that game, it's not going to be, oh, this is going to be bad. You want to go in there saying, we'll win this game, to have that confidence because of the way they've progressed all season long.
Yeah. And in all these things you guys are talking about have to lead. I mean, how do you win games? You score more points than the opponent. So it's about
simple as
it's
that.
About scoring points. It's about two things that indicate what winning is. And I heard one of the NFL analysts talking about this yesterday, and it's so true. It's simple. You got to score more points than your opponent. That's the number one indicator of winning. And then it's turnovers. You know, those are the two things that you got to do. And you talk about toughness and discipline and these things that's got to be instilled in this team. That's what it's got to lead to. You got to score more points. You got to take care of the football, because that's how you win football games in this league. And that's by playing better at the line of scrimmage, being tougher up front. All those things you're talking about accurately, Clay, have to be handled. But ultimately, it has to result in scoring points and taking care of the football.
Yeah, that's one of the areas that I looked at it the last two games of the year where I felt like, okay, this is an improvement, no turnovers in either one of those games. And I gave Barry Lunny a lot of credit for that. He was making the checks at the line of scrimmage. I don't know if you noticed that, but in those last two games, they were going through him. And, I know that if you eliminate turnovers, you'll probably have a chance in the fourth quarter. And they did against Missouri. Now, I'm not saying Missouri is a great team, but that shows me that playing hard, eliminating turnovers, you'll have a chance. And, you know, you have a chance every week, you'll win more games. Yeah. And then they've got to completely upgrade the roster. And, I worry about the defense still. I don't think there's enough talent over there. But I think that Barry Odom has an idea of what he needs and how to plug him in. And he rebuilt that defense at Missouri. And I have confidence. I mean, don't you guys have confidence that the defense is going to get better? Because we can talk about offense all you want. They're giving up 700 yards or 650 yards like they did four times in the last 2 years. You can't match that on offense.
Not going to win many games that way. That's for sure.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle. And Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
Now we're going to get into the best of the worst of the weekend here in just a second. But for all of you NFL heads out there, you know, there's a few news nuggets I wanted to get into. By the way, the Giants have just fired Pat Shurmur, New York Giants, after two seasons. So there's that.
Yeah, what did they call today? Black Monday?
Yeah. Well, yesterday
was... Everybody gets fired today.
Yesterday was Black Sunday, though, for old Freddie Kitchens up in Cleveland as he got the axe, going 6-10 this year. Like, Cleveland should have been so good. So good this year, but for whatever reason, they just couldn't get it going. So, but either way, there's been a few coaches making changes there. I wonder if Jason Garrett's going to be.
That's the big question. Jerry had comments in his post-game press conference that led everybody to believe he'd made up his mind. They'd done some work to get ready for this decision. So,
I mean, he's got to be fired, right?
Well, that's what everybody believes. The difference in the pros and the college is his contract doesn't extend beyond this year.
Yeah.
In college, this would never happen. Yeah. You know.
And I saw the stat, too, that in his 11 seasons as Cowboy head coach, they've missed the playoff six times.
Yeah.
Not ideal for old Jerry Jones, especially with the talent that they have this year.
Well, but the question is, who can you get to come coach at Dallas? And you say, what's the Dallas Cowboys? But I'm telling you, that situation with Jerry Jones, to some, is not as appealing as it is to others.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that
knowing that your owner is going to have a press conference following every game.
Oh, yeah.
Basically put you out there for public display.
Well, it's funny because the hot names for that job are all college football coaches, or at least recently have been one. Because
Lincoln Riley's
one. Urban Meyer's another one.
Matt Rhule's a name that's
Matt Rhule's been thrown around a lot, and even Jim Harbaugh, too. So, you know, I don't think any of those would be bad hires or anything like that. But, boy, I feel sorry for Baylor. If you think you got it going on once again, and then you got to make an adjustment again. But, boy, what would Oklahoma do if Lincoln Riley left? I know you're giggling to yourself because they'd get Nick Saban, Tommy. They'd pay $10 million.
Get Urban Meyer.
Yeah. Well, they could do something crazy like join the Big 12.
Not about Oklahoma?
I'm making fun of them because they are in the Big 12.
Yeah, well, that's true. And they've
got an easy path. It won't matter who they have as head coach. That's an easy. I mean, Baylor in Oklahoma, that's all there is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Texas isn't any good. I mean, they lost five times this year. Big 12 is a cakewalk, and we saw the result of that when they played a real team in LSU. You just go back and you look at Oklahoma in the playoffs. They have proven that they don't deserve to be there. And mm-hmm. the Big 12 is just a candy blank league. You know, I'm mm-hmm. just going to be honest.
Well, see, that is a perfect segue right into it, because I know a few of us are going to have something here for the best and the worst of the weekend here on the Morning Rush.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
We the best.
This is the worst.
It's time for the best and worst of the weekend.
All right, it's time for best and the worst of the weekend, brought to you by Burton Pools and Spas.
Yeah, time's running out on the holiday sale. Save up to $2,700 off on new hot springs hot tubs during Burton Pools and Spas holiday sale that's going on right now. They start at $26.95. These prices include delivery, cover, and startup chemicals for you to stay warm and cozy all winter long. So if you'd like a new hot tub, now is the time. Save big with $2,700 in rebates and discounts or no interest for 5 years on Hot Springs hot tubs. It's all at Burton Pools and Spas, Springdale, and in Fort Smith. Burton Pools and Spas is your source for backyard fun.
Let's go ahead and start with the best of the weekend. Let's go on a positive note here. And I'll start it off. I was going to go with the Razorback basketball team, but to me, that's low-hanging fruit. I'm going to go with the LSU Tigers. That was the best I saw of the weekend. Mm-hmm. And the performance that they put together against Oklahoma was just incredible. I have a few friends of mine that are Oklahoma fans, and they weren't feeling confident that they were going to win, but they were just they were out of sorts. They couldn't even fathom what they saw, especially there in the first half. And here's really a stat, and again, people will give me crap for this, but here's a crazy stat for you. Joe Burrow threw 7 touchdown passes in the first half against Oklahoma in the college football playoff semifinals. Nick Starkel threw 7 touchdown passes all season long for the Razorbacks, and he led the team in touchdown passes. Now, stick that in your pipe and smoke it. Think about that stat. That's how good Joe Burrow was. That's not a slide against Nick Starkel. That's how good Joe Burrow was in this first half. 7 touchdown passes, nearly 500 yards. In fact, he was just 6 yards shy of the bowl record for passing yards in a single game, which is held by who? Nick Starkel.
Yeah.
So it was kind of crazy, the connections there. But my point was is that LSU, offensively especially, it was just so dominant that Oklahoma had no answer for them. I think it's going to be a good game against Clemson. I still think, though, LSU is going to win it. This is just a team of destiny, man. They have it together. They know what they're game planning for. Eddie O has done a phenomenal job, and it'll be nice. I'll say this. I don't care for LSU all that much, but it will be nice to see a team besides Alabama from the SEC win a national championship, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy than Eddie O. Like, you can have your qualms against Nick Saban. You can have your qualms against all these other coaches in college football. I don't understand how you could have any qualms against Eddie O. He's just so easy to root for, and that performance they put on against Oklahoma was for sure my best of the weekend.
Yeah. My best of the weekend came from the Arkansas-Indiana game last night. The flagrant 2 foul that was called on, how do you say, Aljami Durham?
Sounds good to me.
All right. That was a non-basketball play where he just basically spotted Bailey up and boom, popped him with an elbow. Wasn't severe or extreme, but it was totally intentional and just popped him right in the nose with his foul. Now, generally what we've seen in previous years is that's been just called an F1. You move on, let the league office have dealt with it. I thought it made a statement in this game and maybe a statement to the rest of college basketball. That was totally unnecessary, totally intentional. And they removed him from the game because an F2 is an automatic ejection from the game. We haven't seen that call. Now, you had 2 big-time officials in this game, and Terry Oglesby and Bo Borowski, and they went to the monitor. Oglesby worked the TO, worked the Final Four last year. So, I mean, talking about guys that had the clout to go and come back with that decision to eject the player. You generally don't see that from the home conference crew on the home conference floor, but it happened last night. It was the right call. And hopefully players take note, and this is a play you need out of basketball. You don't see it very often because give Eric Musselman credit for pointing that out. That was not caught on the floor. It's Musselman pointing it out to the referees. Yeah. They went and looked at it during the timeout and came back with a decision. And I think you could make the case that might have been the difference in the game towards the end when they were one player short for a guy that only got 5 minutes in the game, a guy that was averaging 30 minutes a game. So I thought that was the best of the weekend last night, seeing that moment happen in that game.
Yeah, because I don't know what the rules are, obviously as in-depth as you do, but when I saw that, I was like, maybe it's because it was the other team. I'm like, if there's a flagrant 2, it wasn't just so egregious, but it was like, it wasn't even like Adriel Bailey, like, really shoved him or anything.
No,
it was
he spotted him up
and then just went, like, there was no subtlety to it.
Totally intentional.
Yeah, it was totally intentional, so I totally get it. But, yeah, that was a good one as well. Clay, what do you got for the best of the weekend?
Yeah, I'm gonna go back to to what Tommy said, and I know this is piling on, I lived in Tulsa for 14 years, so I have some good old friends, including my dentist, and he sent me a message 20 minutes into the game, and he's like, my Sooners look like the Razorbacks, and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I said, LSU scored 13 points in the first 20 minutes against Arkansas. I said, no, your Sooners look like Northeastern State from Oklahoma. That's, they don't look like the Razorbacks. Yeah. This is you don't put the Razorbacks in this class. They didn't ever give up that many in the first first 20 minutes. Anyway, I guess those 14 years living in Tulsa and going to church with a bunch of Sooners, and I mean, they can chirp. And I mean, LSU fans can too. I mean, but that was the best of the weekend for me. You know, just sitting there watching them, it was the perfect storm. You know, they had some injuries. Their defense has been too thin. That's why they're not an SEC team, because they are way too thin. They just don't have enough depth on defense to play in the SEC. And they would get led up about three or four times a year in the SEC. And they better be glad they're in the Big 12. They lose Lincoln Riley, they'll be fine, because they're in the Big 12 and they'll survive.
Yeah. No, that's a great one as well. I guess, do you have any more best
of? I got one more best of. How about, it's not a walk-off, but it was as close to a walk-off tackle as you can get last night with Dre Greenlaw. If you saw the end of the Seahawks 49ers game, the Seahawks get down within the red zone. They have they spike the ball on first down, then have a delay of game on second down, and the 49ers have to have a big stand. It's, 26-21.
Yeah.
And that ended up being the final score. And Dre Greenlaw comes up with the game-saving, essentially game-ending tackle. They went back and put 9 seconds on the clock, and the 49ers had to run one more play. But huge moment. And I'm going to tell you, if you didn't see the end of this, and John, I know you did, that's as close as you can get to scoring without scoring.
I thought the closest was in the Super Bowl in 99 with the Rams and Titans. I thought that was the closest. This one had that one beat.
And Greenlaw, former Razorback Dre Greenlaw, with a huge tackle to save the game, because that was the difference in winning and losing.
The Greenlaw story is a good one, but it keeps getting better, doesn't it?
I mean,
it's just the whole background coming out of the foster care program, you know, and just making a career out of he wasn't even a linebacker when he was in high school. He played safety and returned kicks and played some tailback. And I think that it's just fun to watch Dre, the guy you pull for every single minute.
Now, what is it? Forged by Fayetteville, Tommy. No, proud alum of the Fayetteville Purple Dogs.
What'd you say? Forged?
That's what they say on Twitter all the time. Forged by Fayetteville, whatever that means. So,
I know people were still upset on social media because I guess he tried to re-record his game intro where he said Arkansas.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let him, or he couldn't, or.
Yeah. I don't know.
NBC said no, whatever.
Never was. Yeah, people were all upset by that. We've covered that, folks.
It was lost last night.
It was a lost bet. That's what it was. He means no disrespect. Okay, real quick before we get into worst of, I had another best of, too. Dealing with the Indiana game. Last night, before the game started there in Bloomington, they put up on their little Jumbotron screen that says, hey, get to know Arkansas. They put this up there. Get to know Arkansas. And their stat that they said about Arkansas is 0-7 versus Big Ten opponents on the road. They're now 1-7. Yep.
I saw Hogstats put this on Twitter. I don't have it in front of me, but I think I get this. Going back to 1972-73, Arkansas is now 1-27 when trailing at the half against a Power 5
on the road.
On the road.
Mm-hmm. Pretty incredible.
Think about that.
It's pretty incredible. They're down by 10 or double digits two separate occasions in the second half and still found a way to win. So
at the half, they trailed 38-33, won the game. First time since 72 in my lifetime they've won on the road in an environment like that when trailing at the half.
Yeah.
What's that tell you about coaching and what a difference Eric Musselman has made for this program?
He makes the adjustments, man. He makes it work. So, all right, let's switch to something more fun.
And he's got some shooters, too, baby.
That's always helpful.
He's got some shooters.
Yeah. That's always helpful, too, especially down the stretch. Let's switch it over to the more fun one. Let's get into the worst of the weekend, because I'm going to stick with this Arkansas-Indiana game. I'm in broadcasting, or at least something like that. I try to claim it, you know, whatever.
I know where you're going.
But the Big Ten Network, I don't watch the Big Ten Network at all, if ever. In fact, I didn't even have it. I had to make some on-the-fly adjustments to make sure that I could watch this game.
You have to add the channel?
No. Oh. I'm not paying for
that.
You
just had to find it.
I happened to find it. We'll just say that.
Right.
But I'm watching this game, and I'm listening to these commentators. I don't know their names. I don't care what their names
Dan
are.
Dan Bonner?
Okay. Sure.
He's done March Madness. He's done with CBS for years.
He sucks. Because this team last night was atrocious. Like, I was listening to this, and some of the quotes was, I understand it's a tough job. You're not always going to get it right. You're not always just going to be on your A game. But there was a few things that I just couldn't get over. The fact that, of course, the name escapes me of the play-by-play lady that was doing it, but she had said that when Adro Bailey got elbowed right there and they had flagrant, she alludes to the fact, well, he was talking trash, so, you know, he kind of had it coming. Yeah. That was dumb. But the worst one was by Dan Bonner when he says this, and I quote verbatim, what will keep Arkansas in this game is that you've got to score. Brilliant analysis there by Dan Bonner. Sitting there in a key moment in the first half when Arkansas is down by two, he says, what's going to keep Arkansas in this game is they've got to score. Well, where'd you park your squad car, Dick Tracy? What a great concept for you to come out and say that. That's awesome. So I throw that into the mix. That was really bad having to listen to him. Also, Tommy, I know you're a referee, and this is probably the right call. I still think it's weird, but a flopping warning?
Yeah, that's new this year.
I've never seen it. And
You hadn't been watching a lot of basketball.
I have not seen it, but it was also
weird. You got to get flopping out of the game, man.
Well, I understand that, but to stop the game in mid-action was just kind of strange.
Well, I agree with that. You try to treat it like an injury. There's a foul or something on the play, you deal with it then. But when the ball kind of stalled out, they shut it down and give it because it doesn't make sense when you come back 30 or 45 seconds later. Say, no, we got a flopping warning for something that happened on the other end of the floor 45 seconds ago. Then everybody's totally confused.
I thought it would be more like a sideline warning or like a box warning or whatever they do.
You get one per team, and then if you have any other delay of game warning by a player, it's then a Class B technical foul.
Okay.
So
don't flop. It's a progression thing. No. I don't have a problem with the flopping, like, at all. I'm just saying.
You don't like the administration of the warning.
Yeah, it just kind of seems so out of place. Like, it's like, okay, we're stopping play. You've been warned, buddy. Like, and maybe that's the only way you can do it.
Well, you got to tell them they've been warned.
That's fine, but it just seemed like it was kind of, and I hadn't seen it, and I didn't know. Did he flop, in your opinion?
I did not, because the announcers were so confused by what had happened because it was a delay. I tweeted out, it was for the shot, I believe it was Isaiah Joe.
Yeah, they showed the wrong replay.
And they showed the totally wrong replay, and there was nothing there. I'm like, no. It was on the shot attempt on the three-pointer where he fell down. And the key on the flopping is, if the contact is like on a scale of 1 to 10, is how they're having officials. If the contact's like a 2, but your reaction's like an 8, that's a flop. If your body reaction, your body language is designed to deceive the official, that's a flop. And that's what happened on that play.
Okay, that makes sense.
But I didn't think he flopped. I thought he landed on the guy's foot and lost his balance and fell down. I mean, that's what I saw. And I don't think the official could tell in real time what happened. But I don't think he flopped. Yeah. But I get what the call was, and I don't mind. And, you know, it's kind of like, hey, get the warning in early in the game, and then it'll all stop. Yeah. But I am like you, John, that it, you know, it's like, well, they played another 15 seconds.
Right.
And that's what made it all seem discombobulated.
There isn't a perfect way to stop the game during live ball to give a warning. There's just not. So what you hope to have happen is a made basket closely after or a dead ball for some other reason so that it can be administrated more smoothly.
Well, when they do the, I forget what it's called, but not the sideline warning.
But that's in.
But in basketball, when they get out, the coaches get outside their box or whatever,
bench decorum warning.
Yeah, okay. So I mean, where, do they just stop play for that if that happens?
It depends on the situation. Generally, you don't stop live ball play, but it you certainly can.
Okay. Well, again,
it depends on what he said.
There may not be a perfect way of it, but it just seemed out of place. I don't mind the rule. It just feels like it kind of, you know, could have been a pivotal time. So.
And this is the first year for this. And like most new rules, the fans don't understand. And it takes a little while for the officiating community to figure out the best practice to adjudicate it.
Mm-hmm. Still got to adjudicate.
Yeah.
How about call it? Can we just
adjudicate's
say call it?
A bigger word.
I have never even heard of that word in my life. Can you spell it?
Why do you have to go ruin everything?
That sounds like a word that when y'all are in your little clinics there'll be a title of a section, and you're going to get a book, and it'll say adjudication.
Absolutely.
Absolutely,
Clay.
Adjudication. Okay.
Adjudicate.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I just learned something new today.
You got to adjudicate the rules.
Got to adjudicate.
As written.
All right, Tommy, we just got a couple of minutes here, but what's your worst of the weekend?
That was it right there.
Already starting off with a laugh. All right.
Boomer Sooner. That's all I got to say.
That was the worst of the weekend for you? It was just Oklahoma.
The way they played, I mean, it was just, again, for all those that want expansion in the playoffs, for all those, and I truly believe Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, maybe even Florida would have put up a better contest against LSU as a four seed than what we got out of Oklahoma.
Arkansas did.
There you go.
Arkansas was only down 28-6 at halftime against the LSU.
The defense rest, Your Honor. Yeah. I mean, just, you know, it's man, one of the best lines I saw on Twitter. This is the worst bowl for Oklahoma since the Dust Bowl. I mean, it was just terrible. You know, just awful. Woof.
And Oklahoma, I'll say this, Oklahoma, by and large, this millennium has been a very underwhelming bowl team. And especially when the bowl games matter the most. They always fall short, man. Used to be big game Bob. Lincoln Riley hadn't done much better. I
mean, you grew up in Fayetteville. Clay grew up in Little Rock. When you grow up in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and you work side by side, you got to, you know, you took a lot of delight in this because all the people you've worked and rubbed elbows with your whole life, you feel like, haha.
Yeah, exactly right.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
We had Justin call in the previous segment. He was just talking about the atmosphere last night in Indiana. And again, I wanted to ask you guys this because I know we've had so many things to go through today. But I wanted to ask you guys, is it just me? Is it my bias? Is it my rose-colored glasses? What is it? When I sit there and I see games at Kentucky, I see games at Indiana, I see games at other places that have top 10, top 15 teams. Like, and there's a few programs that are always awesome. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Arkansas is the only one. But to me, it's just like I see that, and then I go to a game at Bud Walton. I'm like, there's no touching it. Like
when it's good,
because here's the thing. I always look at it. It's like if it's a packed out house, what's the atmosphere like? Last night in Indiana, which I know the students were gone, so you know you got to factor that into it. But Kentucky's this way. There's other, like North Carolina's even this way to an extent, unless they're playing Duke. It just seems like these big time programs that have packed out houses, their atmospheres are kind of just like, you know, they're there, they'll cheer at times, but it's just not the intense energy that you get at Bud Walton Arena.
Kentucky fans sit back and cross their arms and say, Tommy, entertain me, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
They're spoiled, Clay.
I think what you have, first of all, is that the money that's required to own those seats, it eliminates what I call, you know, Joe Blow, the good old boy that just, you know, it's going to get out there and get down and dirty in the crowd. And I call it a silk stocking crowd. And, you know, like in Kentucky, you're going to see the fine dresses and you're going to see blue blazers and all. I mean, you really do. You go there and it's just like, you go to an Arkansas game. It's not the same. It's blue jeans. It ain't silk stocking. And I think that you have to decide that you're going to make an impact in the game, and that's what Arkansas fans do. And whether it be in Indiana or Michigan State, you know, you can just go through the list, and it's gotten so expensive at some of these arenas. In North Carolina is the same way. Duke's got it right by putting the students down low, and I'm sure – that, you know, in the upper reaches of, you know, they've got some of those, you know, silk stocking supporters that, you know, that they're just sitting there and watching, but you don't see them because they've got the Cameron crazies lining the court. And there's something to the what they've done, that magic. Now, the SEC does not want you to have students on the court. They want to eliminate that. And they want to eliminate the chance for a student running out on the court. And so they ask you to put them in the, you know, just have a little smattering of students down low. And they want railings there. You notice that's what Arkansas has done.
Yeah.
So but I think you guys are right that the atmosphere in Indiana, it's good. And I think when their team is rolling, it is really good. Yeah. But when you clamp them and they don't score for 8 minutes, it gets quiet. There's nothing to cheer about.
Well, and because I thought it was a good point, Clay, too. And to add to that is that that's what makes it even more amazing at Bud Walton Arena is the students are great, but it's not the student section that's making it the atmosphere that it is. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's the opposite because the student section hasn't always been great. It's not always ones that show up and make sure that the entire lower section's full and they're crazy and raucous. it's just the fans in general. Arkansas fans are very smart, very energized, and very intense basketball fans, and they get it.
And it's that building. I mean, when you walk on top of each other. Well, hang on. But when you walk into that building, you walk in where? On the concourse level, right?
That's right.
Other than the south side where you come up some steps, you come in on the concourse. And then to go down to the floor level, how far are you going down?
Quite a ways.
100 feet or so, I mean, in elevation, maybe more than that. That building is built in a hole, and it holds its sound well. Because you think about how much of that building is above ground. Not a lot.
Very little.
About half of it, maybe?
The upper deck.
So that I've always thought that was one of the reasons that building held its sound well is because it's insulated by, you know, Mother Earth all around it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, listen, we've
built in a hole.
We've talked about it.
It's a pit. It's a pit. That's what it is.
And it holds its noise, and it makes it just 5 or 10% louder than other places of similar size.
Yeah. Well, Frank Broyles and Bud Walton and all the architects that were involved, I mean, it was they did an incredible job of trying to keep that Barnhill atmosphere going in an arena that's twice his size, and they've done a great job with it.
I give Nolan Richardson credit too. He was involved in all those meetings. Yeah.
Morning Rush is brought to you by Arkansas Better Dads. You know, one of the things that I remember from my childhood is going to games at Barnhill Arena with my dad. And, you know, that's one of the things that, as a father, is one of the most important jobs you got, is being a dad. And there's a lot of times out there that you wish you could do better. Thankfully, there's a resource available to you right here in our state that can inspire, instruct, and even create opportunities for better, more positive interactions with fathers and their families. And no matter how difficult your situation may be, giving a little encouragement, mentoring, and simply being there can help you become a better dad for your child that they need and deserve from you. You can do it. To learn more about being a better dad, go to arbetterdads.com. That's arbetterdads.com. This is brought to you by the Arkansas Division of Workforce Services and TANF.
Yeah, and continuing on with our conversation about Bud Walton, and I've said this before, and I think that a lot of people have agreed with it too, is that if you're good, the people are going to show up to the games. And Bud Walton is not going to have, for a conference game when the team's good and exciting, they're not just going to have 6,000 people in the stands for a conference game. I mean, guys, if I'm just looking at it from this perspective, even taking out the Saturday games, just the midweek games, I don't see a single SEC game where Arkansas has less than 14,000 people in the stands. And, you know, if you try to compare that to the rest of the country, and especially the rest of the SEC when it comes to attendance, it just doesn't get any better than that. And it's just so good. I mean, if there was a perfect time for Razorback basketball to have this excitement, it's right now. When you're coming off of that type of season in football, the past few seasons of football, you got a new coach that's come in and Sam Pittman. Yeah, there's still some excitement there, of course, but you know, you got to have something to hold you over a little bit. Razorback basketball has been that perfect little spark that Arkansas fans needed right now. And not only is Arkansas men's basketball doing well, women's basketball is doing great. You got the baseball team that's preseason top 10 with a recruiting class that's number 2 or number 3 in the country of 2020, depending on who you look at. I mean, this spring could be a great one for Razorback fans. This spring could be a perfect antidote to what the fall was for Razorback fans. And then, you know, it could just really take off from there. And this has just been a perfect example, because I can't remember a time where Razorback fans have been this excited about basketball. I think probably the last time is maybe the Bobby Portis, Michael Qualls season. Maybe you could even bring up the final year with Daniel Gafford, or the first year with Daniel Gafford, final year with Jalen Barford and Daryl Macon. There was a lot of excitement there, but this is a team that's overachieving right now in most people's minds. But if you really look at it, Eric Musselman's just made such a difference, and his coaching staff has made a difference in getting these guys to buy in, getting these guys ready. And the potential is just through the roof. I mean, once he gets the players in, which the recruiting class and the 2020 class is looking like it, and if he can continue that and to build on that, I mean, there's no telling where the heights are going to go for this Razorback basketball team.
They did that last night without a post player,
I mean,
no center on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, and Indiana could not take advantage of it in the second half. They could not get the ball to the paint. And, it was a combination of good post defense and great perimeter defense, where the guards could not see the post. And they were always dribbling away from the post because of their pressure. And yet they didn't give up the rim. I'm talking about, you know, they stopped penetration and they kept vision from seeing the post when it was open.
Yeah, and another thing too, Clay, is I loved what Eric Musselman said in the post-game press conference when he said, you know, everyone asked about how we're going to match up with size, how we're going to match up against big men. Well, you also have to worry about how you're going to match up with us with our four guards. And, you know, that's a confident coach there. That's a coach that knows what he's got. That's a coach that's confident in his game plan, is confident in his guys to make plays. And it also shows that, you know, as much as we've talked about it, because we always said, oh, well, what is this team going to do when they line up against a team with some size underneath? How are they going to work? How are they going to do it? Well, they went up against it last night, and they got out of there with a victory. Not saying it's going to happen every time, but they obviously have a game plan in place. And as long as you have Eric Musselman planning, there's no telling what this team will be able to do.
This is a Monday Morning Quarterback brought to you by Crabtree RV in Alma, where you can get sales tax paid or $1,000 back in Christmas cash on the purchase of any RV from Crabtree. You still got today and tomorrow to get the most for your trade and get the best deal of the year. It's all at Crabtree RV in Alma, where your family's dreams come true.
All right, I know we just got a little bit left here in the show, and I just wanted to use this time because and we haven't done a show over the past week, essentially, because of the Christmas holiday, but you know, one of my good friends, Ed Ashoff, of ESPN.com, I'm sure a lot of you have heard this news about his passing with pneumonia just last week at the age of 34. And, you know, it was a guy I talked to 6 weeks ago when Chad Morris was fired. And I texted him, was just talking about the coaching search and all that. And it really was awful to see that happen to a guy who was so talented, who was really good at his job, and it was always one of the nicest guys that I ran into in the media. I know, Tommy, you talked about you guys had him before I arrived here. You had him on the show a few times. It was just awful. Well, awful to see that.
Bad weekend for our business. You mentioned Edward Ashoff's passing, Don Imus, radio legend, passed away at the age of 79, and then Steve Emsinger's daughter-in-law passed away, Carly McCord, in the plane crash on her way to the Peach Bowl. So, you know, just a tragic weekend for those in our business.
Yeah, it was not ideal at all. But, you know, it's sad to see. And, you know, our thoughts and prayers with all those families that have been affected by it. But, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I give a shout-out to my boy Ed Ashoff. And, you know, love you, man. And hopefully I'll see you again. That's for sure. Appreciate everybody that's been listening in to the Morning Rush today. For Tommy Kraft and Clay Henry and Maddie T, I am John Neighbors. Same sports show, same sports channel tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everybody. We will see you then.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.